KKCR Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. Hi, Donna.
Hi. Yeah. I'm so happy to be here. And so happy to be on this wonderful island.
Yeah.
We're so blessed.
Yeah, it's been really nice, hasn't it?
Yeah. Have you been doing your long-distance swimming?
We have been, yeah. Swimming to Hanakapiai and all that sort of stuff.
That's so great.
It's down at Lumahai, and, you know, it's the summer water, so. But before we start our show, I have to say, the opinions of this show are of the speaker, which is you, Donna, and do not represent the board, the volunteers, the programmers, or anybody else here at KKCR.
That's right.
Yeah, and so what's our topic this afternoon?
We're going to be talking about sleep.
Wow, important.
Because it's so important, and insomnia. And,
good.
It's such an important topic that affects so many people. Well, and lack of sleep can lead to a depressed immune system and can make people crazy and can lead to deaths.
It's funny.
I don't have the statistic, but I don't know how many thousands or millions of people die every year from falling asleep on the road, from nodding off.
And we were discussing this the other day about sleep and how it seems that every creature on this planet Earth needs to sleep.
Yeah.
All the birds go to sleep at night. All the cats go to sleep at night. All the dogs go to sleep. And
even the whales.
Whales and the dolphins. And there's a reason for sleep. And what's that reason, Donna?
Well, I can't say I know everything, but it's certainly restorative. And so many processes happen at night that are restorative and that are healing. And one of the major hormones that we want to have released at night is melatonin. And melatonin, of course, allows us to sleep and helps us with our circadian rhythm of, night and day, and that rhythm is so important for our health. There have been so many studies, some people who have, who sleep different times, different days, maybe they have an all-night job a few days a week, and then switch to daytime job other times a week, and that can really lead to immune dysfunction and tumor growth and cancer. So there have been a lot of studies on that. But melatonin also is so important as an antioxidant. So it is so protective to the body. And I think most people are familiar with they've heard of melatonin. So it's something, it's a hormone that is produced in the brain. And it has so many antioxidant qualities. They found that very often women who have breast cancer are deficient in melatonin, other cancers as well. And so in the absence of having enough melatonin, of course, we're going to have insomnia and sleep dysfunction. And we're also going to have immune deficiencies that lead to getting sick. It's been shown that it can affect neurology and plaque formation in the brain, which can lead to dementia or Alzheimer's as well. Many, many effects on the health, effects on blood pressure, effects on chronic inflammation and chronic illness. So many effects. But melatonin is actually, very important antioxidant in the body. So
it's made by the pineal gland, correct?
Yes.
Am I pronouncing that correct?
The pineal gland. I've heard it pronounced both ways.
and that's a gland in the brain, huh?
It is. It's behind the third eye. Okay. It's actually in the hypothalamus, which is another, major important gland. It's the master gland. The pituitary, the hypothalamus, and the adrenal glands are the that the glandular axis that all work together, that are so important for, you know, much of our functioning in our bodies. And so it's really the light reaching through our eyes, through our optic nerve, and goes into the hypothalamus. And in the hypothalamus, there is the SCN, which is what actually regulates melatonin and cortisol, which is what's secreted by the adrenal glands. In the morning, we have the highest amount of cortisol, so that's to help us with activity and waking up. And that, of course, becomes very dysfunctional as people progress in adrenal fatigue. And this is one of the things we're going to be talking about. There's so many, you know, sleep insomnia can be so complex, and there are many different causes, but some of the main ones we're going to talk about, and one of them is the adrenal fatigue syndrome. Okay, so complete adrenal fatigue is very much recognized in mainstream medicine, okay, as Addison's disease. So that's when the adrenal gland completely stops functioning. Very serious condition. Many doctors in conventional medicine are not necessarily looking at adrenal fatigue in the less severe forms that it takes. So that's why we're going to call it adrenal fatigue syndrome, because it's a whole set of symptoms. One of them is insomnia and restlessness, anxiety. And so many people, and there are different stages of adrenal fatigue, and it manifests in different ways. In the second stage of adrenal fatigue is when you start getting spikes of the adrenals putting out more hormones like cortisol. And so when you have a cortisol spike, normally you have the highest amount when you wake up in the morning, and then it gradually decreases during the day, and it's, you know, very, very extremely low at night. But you can have that cortisol that's spiking at night. And this comes with stress. So stress is really the most important factor in adrenal fatigue, but also drinking coffee and having a diet high in sugar and not enough in protein. We've talked about this different times on this show. It's so important to have a good sustainable amount of protein to contribute to blood sugar balance in the body. And another cause of insomnia is when the blood sugar is spiking. So not only does that cause a release in cortisol, but just a very subtle spike that happens can wake a person up and keep a person awake. So we don't want to have dessert before we go to bed, because we're going to have an increase of glucose in the blood, which is going to cause a release of hormones like insulin and leptin in the blood, which is going to cause storage of glucose. And especially, you know, many people are conscious of not wanting to gain weight, but that's probably the worst time to have sugar. So that's all going to go into fat storage. It's also going to turn on the mechanisms that turn on cholesterol. So if people have high cholesterol, that's going to be a major factor. So here we are, we've got high glucose, we've got a large release of insulin, which is going to store this glucose into the cells, and then the adrenal glands say, okay, well, you know, we don't have enough blood sugar now. The blood sugar has dropped very low, which many of you have heard the word hypoglycemia, so that just means very low blood sugar. Now, the brain needs a certain level of blood sugar to survive, so it's a very important one very important role of the adrenal glands to say, okay, we're going to release cortisol, and cortisol is going to help to break down glycogen, which is short-term storage of glucose or, you know, fat to break down. But usually it's the glycogen that's broken down so that there's a level of glucose in the blood. So if we're going to eat something like fruit, which is actually high in sugar, or drink fruit juice, you know, within a couple hours before bed, you're going to get a high spiking of glucose, a drop in glucose, and then more spiking of glucose, and also the release of cortisol, which can make people very anxious. Okay, so that's obviously going to wake somebody up and cause them to have insomnia. So that's, you know, and you can, so that's like one way to really look at, you know, sleeping well at night. So it's important. For those who've been listening to the show every week, you know, we often talk about protein. And when I say protein, I'm not talking about necessarily a slab of meat. Okay, we can get protein very nicely from nuts and seeds. You know, I love sunflower seeds, and walnuts have beneficial omega-3s. So many benefits to fresh nuts and seeds. So, you know, we're not necessarily, a lot of people, when they hear the word protein, they think, okay, we're talking about meat. But, you know, what we really want to do to stabilize blood sugar, especially for people who are starting to have adrenal fatigue, they actually need to eat protein every 2.5 to 3 hours a day, even just a protein snack. And eating, you know, a protein snack and maybe with some beneficial fat, like avocado, is a very, very healthy raw food that has beneficial fat. It also has some protein. That's going to help to stabilize the blood sugar, because it gets digested and assimilated over a sustained period of time.
And again, for those who don't know, where are the adrenals, Donna?
Oh, thank you. As I was talking about, I was thinking, oh yeah, I've got to talk about where those adrenal glands are. The adrenal glands are sitting on top of the kidneys. Okay, so the kidneys are, it's called retroperitoneal, so in the back of the abdominal cavity. So there are two kidneys. I'm talking about the kidneys. Did I say adrenal glands? Yeah, but the adrenal glands are also retroperitoneal in back of the abdominal cavity, and they sit right on top. They're small. They sit, each one on the left and right side, sit on top of the left and right kidneys. And you have two main sections of the adrenal glands. You have the adrenal cortex, which secretes most of the hormones that have to do with hormone regulation in the body. And then you also have the adrenal medulla, and that secretes the catecholamines like epinephrine and norepinephrine. So that's adrenaline. So this is why stress really can contribute to, chronic stress can contribute to chronic fatigue and chronic adrenal syndrome burnout. The adrenaline is released way back when we needed to run away from a lion. Look out! We have a lion in the studio. Anyways, I don't know why these two lovely dogs are so quiet with a lion in the studio. But anyways.
Yes, we have our dogs in here, Lulu and Felix, and they're sleeping.
Yeah, they're chilling. Okay, so, so, you know, adrenaline is designed so that we can fight or flight. We can run fast. And all the mechanism that will help us do that to survive get turned on in the presence of adrenaline. But what happens is when we're stressed, when we're worried, when we're sitting at our desk in front of our computer or whatever we're doing during the day, and we're stressed about money or whatever, that adrenaline is still being released, and it's chronic. And in, again, if we're having a diet that's too low in protein and high in carbohydrates and carbohydrates and sugars, and not enough vegetables and beneficial fats and protein, then that's going to be triggering our adrenal glands. Coffee, caffeine is going to trigger the adrenal glands. Other medications as well. So back to our topic of sleep and insomnia. So the adrenal glands play such an important role, and again, they're working, you know, very intimately with the two major hormone glands in the brain, the pituitary and the hypothalamus. So I think I didn't finish explaining. The light goes in, you know, goes into the optic nerve, you know, through our eyes. And then in the hypothalamus, the SCN is what is regulating release of cortisol in the adrenal glands and release of melatonin as well, which is going to help us sleep. So in order to sleep well, okay, we need this release of melatonin. If we have lights on, at night, whether, you know, depending on how sensitive the person, it can be, you know, after dinner, it can be before bed. The lights that have a bluish hue to them, are especially, difficult and affect us in that we're not producing the melatonin. So that would be like TV screens, computer screens, in, you know, regular incandescent lights. And so really what we need in order to have a prolonged and sustained level of melatonin being secreted through the night is we need a dark environment. And we need to also, before we go to bed, not be stimulated, you know, with light. So, you know, probably sitting in bed with a laptop is not what we want to do before bed if we're having trouble.
It's better with a good book.
It's much better with a good book. And, you know, not a book that might be triggering,
scary,
you know,
book.
You know, adrenaline. Ooh, exactly.
A love story.
Right. Exactly. Or even meditation.
Uh-huh. But what about e-books now?
Yeah, that's a big issue. Uh-huh. Yeah, so maybe before bed is not the time for an e-book. Uh-huh. If you're having trouble. So, you know, if we get up in the middle of the night, we need to use the bathroom, turning on a light. You know, if we have trouble getting back to sleep, turning on a light is not the best thing to do, because that will stop the production of melatonin. And again, in case you're just tuning in now, we talked earlier about melatonin, and not only is it helping us have an important sleep, but it has many antioxidant effects on the body that are extremely important for our health. And for helping to get rid of cancer cells. A lot of people don't understand where the body is always making cancer cells, but then we have good, excellent immune systems that break them down. And when that doesn't happen, that's when a tumor can start forming. So the lack of light is very, very important at nighttime. Also, it turns out that it's very important to have good light during the day. Like that light going through via our optic nerve in our eyes and getting into that center, SCN center in the hypothalamus, also is reading, you know, good full spectrum light from sun, hopefully. And this time of year, we're getting lots of sun here on Kauai.
We get a lot of sun all year, mm-hmm. as opposed to places like in Alaska or Sweden.
Right.
I mean,
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I wonder if they've adjusted genetically to that or if they have difficulty.
You know, that's a really good question. And also, you know, if we're in an office, you know, all day and we're not having proper lighting, if we're having fluorescent lighting, you know, we're not getting the proper light. So that also is going to affect sleep. Now, there are two different kinds of insomnias generally. There's the kind that's very difficult to actually fall asleep. And then there's the kind that we wake up and we can't fall asleep after we wake up. Some people have both. Now, melatonin actually peaks at between 9 and 10 at night. So that's really the optimal time to fall asleep. That's when we're designed to go to sleep, between 9 and 10 at night. So what happens to many of us, and myself, too much of the time, that's why I'm fighting a cold right now. but it's because, you know, I've been so busy. I use the nighttime to catch up on things. And so what happens is the adrenal glands go on override. So here's another place that leads to adrenal burnout. So the adrenal glands, many people are on overdrive all day long, and they don't even realize it because they've been doing it their whole lives. And they're used to riding on that excess, you know, adrenal energy. And so the adrenal glands will kick in and go on overdrive, you know, after 10 at night. So that's another area where people often are saying, okay, well, now I have more energy. But inevitably it's going to lead to adrenal burnout, and it's going to lead to more insomnia if that person is having trouble with insomnia. Now, if we look at Chinese medicine, there are different reasons for insomnia. Some of them are the liver. The energy is stuck in the liver or depressed, and that can lead to insomnia. And I want to talk about that, but let me just, we'll just talk about the other Chinese medicine diagnoses. And I also want to say that, you know, here's a wonderful way to try to help your body get back in balance, and that would be going to a Chinese medical practitioner or a naturopathic doctor like myself that also practices Chinese medicine. So that can be very beneficial. Also, homeopathy can be very beneficial.
It says that the heart and the liver are affected in Chinese medicine
for
insomnia.
Right, so we're talking about the liver just now, and then the heart. Thank you, Cousin Rich. The heart, there's excess heat and energy that is in the upper part of the body, or in Chinese medicine it's called the upper Jiao. And so the heart meridian, the heart organ system, is affected. And so, you know, some of those symptoms are insomnia and heart palpitations and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also blood deficiency. So that's another Chinese medicine term. So that can also lead to insomnia.
It says, if I may read a little bit, if these organs, the heart and the liver, are out of balance, they will not be able to house the spirit properly. And the spirit
mm-hmm.
will wander.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Right.
Will wander.
It's called the Shen, the spirit.
The Shen, yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
When the Shen wanders, what happens?
Well, it's not rooted, and so then you can have insomnia. Other causes of insomnia, of course, are hormone imbalances, which particularly can commonly affect women. So PMS time, premenstrual time, that can be, it doesn't even have to be just premenstrual time, but hormone imbalances during a woman's monthly cycle at different times. Mostly women tend to have more insomnia during the premenstrual time. that can also lead to liver. So we're going to talk about the liver. But also menopause is another time, or perimenopause or menopause, postmenopause, where the hormones can be out of balance. There's also a very intimate connection in the body with the thyroid gland, the ovaries in a woman, and the adrenal gland and the hypothalamus. So that's a kind of another major system pathway that can all affect each other. So the liver. So what makes the liver toxic? So certainly there are environmental toxins. Certainly, and so these are going to affect, you know, anything toxic in the body is going to affect the liver. The liver will be overloaded. One of the major, the liver is responsible for many metabolic functions. One of the major functions of the liver is to detoxify. It's the major detoxifying organ in the body. Many of you know that, or if you've tuned into our show, we talk about the liver a lot because we're talking about holistic medicine on Health Talk Radio Show. And in holistic medicine, we recognize that all systems of the body are going to affect each other. And when we're looking at the root cause of a condition, an imbalance, or a disease, then we have to look at how everything interacts, including the body and the mind, and all intimately related. And so when we have toxins in the body, and we'll talk about forms of toxins, but when we have toxins in the body, the liver needs to address those toxins and filter them and break them down and get rid of them. And it's also breaking down the major hormones in the body, okay, the sex hormones. So when we're talking about PMS or even menopause in a woman, what happens is if the liver is not able to do its job as it should, and the energy is stuck in the liver, and it's let's say clogged up with too many toxins, then it's not going to be able to break down the hormones. Okay, so it's got to break down the hormones. So that's why, you know, towards the end of the cycle, before the period, a woman has more premenstrual symptoms. Okay, like insomnia, irritability, and largely that has to do with the health of the liver. And that would be, you know, similar menopause as well. Now, let's talk about certain toxins that affect the liver.
Okay? Let's.
Yeah. So, I know you know some, Cousin Rich. He's going to the computer. Okay. So some of the toxins would be food sensitivities. So some people are sensitive to certain foods. They may or may not realize it. And that particular food is toxic to their body. So common one, you know, that we're all kind of hearing about would be gluten, would be wheat and barley, rye, and the different grains that have gluten. That's a very common one. Peanuts are common. Dairy is actually a common allergen. It doesn't actually have to be an allergen, which is going to create an allergic response, which is an immune-mediated response. But someone can have a food sensitivity that is actually toxic to their body without having an immune response or an allergic response. What causes that very often would be inflammation in the intestinal lining, which is known to be leaky gut syndrome. That's something that you could look up on the internet if you wanted to. And so what happens is we have little when there's irritation of the lining of the intestines, we're going to have very tiny tears. Like if our skin is irritated, we're going to have little tears, microscopic tears. And that can allow a food protein that did not get broken down and digested properly to, it's in the colon, that food didn't get digested and assimilated into the body, so it needs to be eliminated. So it's waiting in the colon to be evacuated. Now, if you have this irritation and you have these microscopic tears, it can actually slip through the tear of the intestinal lining and get into the bloodstream unbroken down. Now, that is going to be a foreign protein to the blood, to the body, and the body is going to be like, what is this? You know, we need to attack. It leads to all kinds of issues in the body. It can lead to headaches, can lead to uterine fibroids, it can lead to arthritic pain, it can lead to muscle, you know, pain, it can lead to different kinds of inflammation. Inevitably, it's going to lead to chronic illness. And the liver is going to get overloaded because all of a sudden there are all these foreign toxins in the body. So it's just one of those important mechanisms in the body that can create chronic illness over time. A person does not need to continue to have chronic illness. There are ways to just heal the body. And one of the first things we need to do is to identify all of the aspects that are overwhelming the body. Okay, so some of those are going to be food sensitivities in a particular person. Could be stress. Stress is the biggest one. So the liver, what else? We have environmental toxins. We have medications. We have coffee. All of those things are going to overload the liver, and the liver is not going to be able to do its other metabolic processes, its processes of breaking down hormones, its processes of breaking down cholesterol or even making cholesterol. Okay, these are just very few of many, many, many metabolic processes in the body.
Talks about liver stagnation.
Yeah, you're looking up the Chinese medicine.
Yeah.
So liver stagnation is a Chinese medicine term.
And congestion.
And congestion, yeah. Right.
Talks
right.
Even about heart attacks, how the liver can, a bad liver can,
mm-hmm.
can cause heart problems as well because the body gets overloaded. And,
right.
Very interesting, Donna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what happens is in Chinese medicine, there's called the Chinese medicine clock. And you can look at the time that a person is waking and know what system is most out of balance. So the liver time in the Chinese medicine clock is between 1 and 3 a.m. So a lot of people wake between 1 and 3 a.m., and that would be a sign. Okay, I have toxins in my body and my liver's not doing a good job. And so I need to look at that. So there are so many things that a person can do on their own, and they can also be guided by, you know, a holistic health practitioner or a Chinese medicine practitioner. But one of the things one can do on you know, what we can do on our own, the obvious would be decreasing and eliminating alcohol. Coffee is very toxic to the body, and we're not just talking about the caffeine effects on the adrenal glands, but coffee is very toxic. It's acidic. It has toxic compounds, and so anyone who drinks coffee, the liver is going to be overloaded and out of balance.
Thank you for mentioning that. We've talked about this before.
Yes.
People always think it's the caffeine. And you're saying it's more than just the caffeine, it's the actual components
Correct.
Of the coffee itself.
Yes, there are toxic components, and the caffeine is acidic. So when the blood's acidic, that creates inflammation. It creates, it actually creates osteoporosis. So you have, where are we? You have Acid in the blood, okay, from too much caffeine. Too much coffee. Caffeine is acidic as well. Sugar is acidic. High meat animal protein diet is acidic. And so the body needs to make it more neutral. And so it takes the calcium out of the bones in order to neutralize this acid. So when we drink coffee, we're actually contributing to calcium loss out of the bones. So,
wow.
So that definitely can lead to osteoporosis.
We have a call.
Okay.
Hello, you're on the air.
Doctor, thank you so much.
Aloha.
Aloha, guys, for taking my call. I have a question regarding coffee.
Yes.
I've cut my coffee use in half.
Good.
And I'm trying to cut it down to even less. The only caveat I would like to introduce to your discussion or your presentation is that in all these studies, or most of the studies, that they find that folks who drink 2 to 4 cups of regular coffee a day have less of an incidence of Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, given the seemingly beneficial results, and given, yes, the caveat or the qualification that coffee is acidic. I'm quite aware of that. What I do is after I sin and I have my organic coffee, which I roast myself in an iron frying pan to add to my iron.
Good for you.
I'm doing my best to cut back because I know the dangers of which you speak. And after I just read the book, Alkalinize or Die. And I totally buy into that whole concept of the acid-alkaline balance. And I'm always preaching the gospel of, well, we in the West suffer from all these degenerative diseases because we our blood becomes too acidic and our body's too acidic, and therefore it leaches the magnesium, et cetera, all these minerals out of our bones and blood. And so I read 4 books on health every 2 weeks. I'm quite aware of it.
You know what? I think you've blessed us before with your phone calls.
Yes,
and talking.
Well, the point is,
you're pointing out that studies have said that coffee is good for Parkinson's.
Given all the bad things about coffee, and I totally agree with you on that perspective, I think that, one can get to a point where a minimal amount of organic coffee, which you roast yourself and you consume very judiciously, can have certain benefits. See, the thing is, after I have all my...
Well, this is something that we should investigate, Donna, and perhaps have a show just on the benefits of coffee.
I do is after I have my organic teas, et cetera, and my breakfast. After 3 hours, then I take the pH strips and I check the old shishi, and my numbers are probably about 7.5.
Well, that's good that you're regulating the the acid alkaline balance in your body.
Let me ask you,
but what I want to say first is that when we're talking about something like coffee, studies saying, I haven't seen these studies, Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, much of the cause has to do with inflammation. So whatever is causing inflammation in the body can cause inflammation in the brain. One of the things that we're talking about today with sleep is melatonin. They've actually found that melatonin is going to help to reduce plaque formation. People who are drinking coffee and having caffeine. Yeah, people who are having caffeine are not, they're going to be having trouble sleeping. But I think there are many, many factors.
There was another issue which you just mentioned, melatonin. See, the thing is, I was not just concerned with the leaching, making the body more acidic, with the coffee consumption. That's why I cut back in half, and I'm trying to get down to a third of what I would normally take. Is I was concerned with the issue of cortisol buildup.
Yes.
And the whole thing is, so I was thinking, well, gee, you're not going to probably fight a lion today, Kalika. So you better chill on this chill the old adrenal, like adrenal stressing out, dude. So what I'm trying to do is, because I really believe in the benefits of melatonin, and I'm an older dude, so I have a hard time getting to sleep, and so I take the L-tryptophan, and I take melatonin. And my question is, is there a danger in taking too much melatonin?
All right. Well, we'll try to answer that.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
There was a study this week also on coffee that came out in the news that it's good for you. So,
you know, I think they're maybe looking at, you know, one particular aspect that they're trying to find. And you know, it really depends on the subjects. So, you know, one of the topics where they have found coffee to be beneficial is in colorectal cancer. And so if you look at people who are having standard American diets and they're completely constipated, they're going to have a tendency, you know, the feces are going to be recirculating the body and hanging out in the colon. And so you're going to have, you know, a higher incidence of cancer from all the toxins. So if coffee is helping to make them have a bowel movement, that's going to lessen the effect of, you know, and with someone who has a standard American diet and they have coffee in there, that's going to help them have more frequent bowel movements, then yes, it would have a positive effect. But it's not necessarily going to have a beneficial effect on the liver. I mean, certainly what we're talking about here are different ways that coffee is very toxic to the body. And yes, we can do things to take certain herbs like psilocybin, which is milk thistle, which helps to process the liver and cleanse the liver. And we can do things to bring the alkalinity up, like this caller is talking about. Now,
we have about 5 minutes left, Don, on our show.
This went fast.
Very fast. Let's close up with methods to help with insomnia and sleep.
Yes. So, really, you know, the basics are important. So we want a dark atmosphere, okay? We want to get good light during the day, and we want everything to be dark at night. We already talked about not, you know, being on the computer late at night. Those things are very important. Also, EMF radiation, so electromagnetic radiation, can affect our sleep. So things like alarm clocks that are plugged in, you know, we want to move those away from our heads. Cell phones that are on, we want to move away from our heads. Outlets, we want to move away from our heads. Individuals that are very sensitive, they actually turn off their circuit breakers at night, and that's beneficial. Now,
what about stuff like a nice cup of hot chamomile tea?
Yeah.
You know, what can one do as opposed to eating the bowl of ice cream and watching TV?
Right. So one can get good protein and beneficial fats throughout the day, and then maybe an hour or two before bed have a small protein snack, so, and not have a big meal. And stay away from the ice cream or even fruit before bed. Chamomile tea is very relaxing. Any kind of herbal tea is going to be relaxing. It's important that it, you know, just drinking a hot cup of tea is relaxing in and of itself. But chamomile is good.
What about valerian?
Valerian is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Taking melatonin is also good, but, you know, at first we want to try to restore the natural rhythms. Going to bed at the same time every night, that's important. And creating a rhythm is very, very important. Taking a warm bath at night and really trying to create a low stress environment and low, you know, dark environment.
And what about people like my friend Colette? She works the graveyard shift and mm-hmm. has difficulty coming home in the morning and going to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And you recommended
a
dark space, correct?
Yeah, I recommend that she invest in some, you know, dark, you know, shade coverings mm-hmm. of whatever will work. And one can also use a face mask, you know, a dark face mask. That's very mm-hmm. beneficial.
And what about herbs, like Chinese herbs? Any specific?
Yeah, a very common one is called Sisyphus.
And how do you spell that?
Z. Sisyphus. I'm blanking okay. right now. You could look it up on your handy computer there. Z-Y-S-Z-Y-P-H-U-S. Sisyphus, I believe. You know, that's a typical one. Polygonon is another typical one. And again, you know, looking at how we can reduce stress, how we can look at adrenal glands and what nourishes the adrenal glands. And again, you know, having a sustained level of protein and beneficial fats throughout the day is just mm-hmm. so important. But there are certain herbs like ashwagandha that can nourish the adrenal glands. Mm-hmm. And again, we don't want to eat, you know, after 7 at night. So those are important. There's L-tryptophan or 5-HTP, which is precursor to the neurotransmitter serotonin, which is a precursor to melatonin. So that can really help. And again, having a protein snack gives that L-tryptophan, which is an amino acid. So amino acids are the breakdown of proteins.
That Z-I-Z-I-P-H-U-S, it's a member of the buckhorn family.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, Donna, this has been a very informative show.
It's been wonderful, and you know, there's so much more to having a good night's sleep, and many people suffer, and it's an important topic, and we'll be talking about it more. And
one time we should discuss the horrors of taking those sleeping pills that mm-hmm. us all over the television set. There's some pretty bad results with that. So
there can be, and it also leads to putting the body more off balance.
Well, thank you for giving a lot of information about helping us with sleep.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Thanks for making this show happen. It wouldn't happen without you, Cousin Rich.
Oh, thank you, Donna. You're quite a you're quite an informative physician. So thank you so much.
Blessings.
All
Aloha.
Right. Aloha.